Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Lakers Collective. Happy to see you all here. 9 games left in the regular season. What can the Lakers do? Well, we'll talk a little bit about last night's win against the Indiana Pacers. If you haven't done so yet, please hit the subscribe button. He's Jovan Buha, Jason Timpf. I'm Trevor Lane. Guys, this has been a fun stretch of the Lakers season here. Excited to get into it with you today.
What's up, guys? It's good to see you. Trevor, you look good without a hat, man. We got to get this look more often.
I figured, you know what? I did it yesterday. I had to do a thing on NBA TV, and I'm like, you know what? Screw it. So many people were commenting on it. I'm like, I'm just going to do it again and make the comments go crazy.
You look great. And speaking of great, Lakers just had a great road trip, went 5-1, had several clutch games against some pretty good teams that they closed out. And I always say, like, going 500 on the road trip, that's a solid trip. If they went 4-2, would have been a pretty good trip, but going 5-1, that's a great trip.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, this was, if you told us going into this stretch that the Lakers would do what they just did, not just going 5-1, but against the teams that they beat, that's absolutely fantastic. 2 in a row against the Houston Rockets, the Miami Heat, one of the most difficult teams to play on the second night of a back-to-back with the pace that they play with, beating Orlando. Look, you got to be happy with what they've done. Last night, they took down the Pacers. Maybe not a surprise that they did. Well, I guess before we even dive into that, everybody coming in and joining right now, we're going to approach this show as very much like a Q&A show. So we're going to talk a little bit about the Pacers right now, but put your comments in, your questions in. We're going to spend the bulk of today's show talking with all of you. So hit us with your questions, your comments. That's what we're going to dedicate most of this show to. But Jason, why don't you give us your thoughts on Lakers-Pacers from last night?
I just love the dead serious attitude out the gates. Like, I was 10% worried about this game. I didn't necessarily think the Lakers would lose. I just thought it would be a lot tougher than it would appear on the surface, just simply because they've been playing their three core guys in Nembhard, Nesmith, and Siakam as of late. And as you laid out on Tuesday, Trevor, there's not as much incentive for the Pacers to lose at this point as there typically would be. And I just thought the Lakers came out dead serious, very intense. I thought Jake LaRavia set the tone earlier with this early in the game with his ball pressure. The Luka Doncic first quarter scoring barrages continue. The this matchup has been one that the Lakers have taken care of business in for the most part over the last few years. One of the reasons why is, one, Austin Reeves gets a lot of drop coverage looks against the centers they had last year. But this year, they're just too small for Luka. Their perimeter defenders just simply can't handle him. I think one of the biggest takeaways I had from last night, flat out, was just how good LeBron looked athletically. And when you, like, he had the poster that everyone saw, the body bump through Jairus Walker in the left-handed finish. But he had another one off of a cut on a Luka Doncic drive, where he elevated and, like, in traffic, dunked with his right hand on Jae Huff. And just throughout the night, just had a ton of energy. And I think, like, really when you look at this Laker team in the big picture, LeBron going through a stretch like that where he plays 6 road games in 10 days with all the travel, all the airplanes, all the late arrival, all the sleeping in crappy hotel room beds and not his bed at home, and him, like, getting stronger as the trip kind of progressed, you know, like, I, even how athletic he looked in the second half against Detroit as an example, I just thought in general the way that LeBron looked athletically was just a super encouraging sign for the long-term potential of this group, because the schedule is just going to get lighter from here. Obviously they have some tougher games, but they have some more time off, the travel schedule is lighter, and then you get into the postseason where they're going to have home court advantage. Like, theoretically, from the final day of the regular season, the Lakers won't have to leave Los Angeles for like a week and a half. It'll be like 10, 11 days because they'll have the full week of the play-in tournament off. And I, like, look, they might slip behind Denver if Denver wins out, but they're certainly going to have home court advantage in the first round at this point. It's very far more likely than not, I should say. And so with that being the case, I think that they're going to end up getting that Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday stretch of that first week of the postseason in LA too. So the schedule's just going to get easier, and LeBron looking stronger, I just think it's a really encouraging sign, a nice response from a disappointing loss. If you're a Laker fan, I don't think you could feel any better about the team right now relative to expectations, even at the beginning of the season, just with what this group had and you know, the lack of big picture investment from Rob Pelinka. For them to be sitting here like, hey, we got a shot to like make a legit conference finals run here if we can win a first round series and upset a Spurs team, like, I just think you're sitting pretty if you're a Lakers fan.
Yeah, I mean, it's a nice spot to be in. Certainly the team's playing their best basketball of the season, and the version of LeBron James they're getting right now is fantastic. The version of Luka, we're starting to get in MVP conversations. This is a great spot to be in for the Lakers right now. Jovan, the athleticism we're seeing from LeBron, do you agree with Jason? Do you think it's sustainable once we get into the postseason because of maybe a little bit more rest coming up for the Lakers?
Yeah, and we've talked about this recently with the Lakers having these strong closes to the season the last few years, right? And that is a LeBron special, where LeBron has talked about it several times before, where he likes to progressively ramp up throughout the course of a season. And you look at his monthly splits the last few years, like LeBron is often playing his best basketball in March, April, and then going into that first round of the playoffs. And I think the Lakers caught a notable break last night with Houston blowing a double-digit overtime lead to Minnesota. I was reacting to that game live on my post-game show, and now Houston is a game and a half back against Minnesota, with Minnesota for that number five spot. And they play one more time. The winner of that will win the season series. But Houston is fading at the worst possible time, and they just have been in this rut for an extended period. And we'll see what happens with Fred VanVleet if he's able to return. We don't really have a clear update on that yet. But if they're the team that ends up at number six and the Lakers stay at number three, I really like that matchup for the Lakers much more than Minnesota or Denver. Like, I think both of those series could be series you could go either way in terms of who would come out of it. Houston, I think, decisively would be the Lakers over the Rockets. My current pick would be Lakers over Rockets in five. So I if the Lakers get that, I think that would be a really fortunate first-round matchup for them.
Can I jut in here really quick and tell a funny story from last night?
Please do.
So I quit watching that Timberwolves-Rockets game twice last night. So I'm hanging out with my wife, and, you know, like, I'm like, okay, I got a tight timeline tomorrow morning. I'm getting up at 5:30 to crash course Celtics Thunder. Like, if I could watch Timberwolves Rockets, it would just kind of help me with my time frame tomorrow. So, like, she's sitting down in the basement with me, and she's being a good sport. She used to play college basketball, so, like, she has, like, a much higher bandwidth to watch basketball than most women do. But at the same time, like, she doesn't want to just sit there and watch hoops all night. So, like, if the game gets out of reach, I'm like, all right, let's turn something on. And we've been rewatching How I Met Your Mother as, like, our brainless TV to shut our brains off before we go to bed. So the Timberwolves go on that little run, and they go up, I think, 11 with, like, 3 minutes left. So we turn the game off, and we go over to How I Met Your Mother. Then I check my phone randomly, and it's, like, KD's shooting the free throw to tie the game, or the away from the play foul that tied the game. And I'm like, what the hell? So we, like, run over there. Turn on the game. I just get to see the Alperen Şengün block that goes to overtime. I race back through all the footage during the commercial before overtime to see what the hell happened. Then I see the Rockets just absolutely bum rush the Timberwolves to start overtime. They go up 13 with 3 minutes left, and I turn the game off again. And then I go to bed. And when I go to bed, guys, we have this little group chat that we kind of brainstorm ideas for the show. And, you know, one of our producers, Muzzy, he texts us and is like, hey, guys, what are you guys thinking for the rundown tomorrow? That's what you guys see over there, that little, like, four-digit rundown, right? So Jovan comes in, and he, like, texts in the four topics. And it's like, one of the topics he puts in is, like, you know, Houston loses to Minnesota. They're now 1.5 games back effectively in the standings. They're most likely going to be the sixth seed. I'm, like, literally typing out a text message that's like, Jovan, you're wrong. You missed the comeback, dude. And, like, in the middle of it, I'm like, I should probably double check this just in case. So I go over to the ESPN app, and I'm like, oh my God, they blew it again. And, like, had to go back and watch the footage. It was absolutely crazy. That was one of the, like, they went on a 26-2 run. And then promptly blew it and lost the game with a 13-0 run. That was one of the craziest games I've ever seen. Both teams were, like, trying to lose.
That was, like, the first, I think it was the first time, and the stat was out there, something like 180 overtime games, something absurd that something like that had happened, that it would have been that big of a comeback. What was your opinions on the Scott Foster call ejecting Naz Reid?
He's so weak, man. Like, he got his feelings hurt. I can't stand Scott Foster, dude.
Yeah.
Did you guys hear Julius Randle trash talking Ime Udoka? Or like, he literally was like, he's like, how did you guys come back? And he was like, Ime Udoka, man.
I mean, that would be a fun playoff series.
It would be.
But Lakers Rockets. I think the Lakers take that one.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. All right, let's get into some of our questions, our comments here. You know, I have a feeling that through the course of responding to our questions, we're going to get into recapping the road trip. We'll talk about the Houston matchup, all that kind of stuff, a little bit more in depth. Mamadou said, hey, guys, do you see the starters being very exhausted because of the workload and JJ not playing the bench? Yeah, I think part of that is the injuries contributed to that a little bit as well. They've had a few guys go down. That's been a factor. But just watching, they do look like they're running out of gas a little bit, which is going to make having a couple days off here coming up on the, over the weekend, that's certainly going to help. That'll be nice for the Lakers to get a little bit of a break.
I think the minutes are out of control right now. I'm actually going to take a little bit more of an aggressive stance right now. Looking at it, Austin has played, I believe, 10 straight games at 37 plus minutes. Luka, 9 of those 10 games, he's been at 37 plus minutes. I just think we've seen this. Like, it's been funny because, you know, I think we had talked last show about, could the Lakers potentially blow out the Pacers and like get some rest? Yeah. And that was the plan. If you look at it, it was actually similar to the last Pacers game where JJ front loaded Luka's minutes, where the previous Pacers game, he played 32 of the 36, doesn't play in the fourth. That was the plan again last night. And then the Lakers let go of the rope, had they were running on fumes at that point. They were clearly tired, clearly fatigued. And Indiana hit them with a 45 point fourth quarter to make it not really a game, but at least like to the point where you had to bring Austin and LeBron back in with a few minutes left. Luka has to come back in, doesn't get to rest in the fourth quarter. So like that was disappointing from a rest perspective. Ultimately, like the game was never really in the balance there in the fourth. But I think they got to be careful here because I like on the one hand, I could understand the argument of, okay, like championship shape, you want the guys in a certain rhythm. You want them maybe used to playing a certain amount of minutes going into the playoffs. At the same time, I just think there's far, like these guys should not be playing 40 minutes in regular season games that aren't going to overtime. I just think that's a little ridiculous. And even if it's just buying like 2 to 3 minutes to cut that down to 40 to 38 or 37 or 38 to 35, 36, like I think JJ needs to be a little bit more flexible with the rotation and trusting the bench. And I get it. Because the drop, especially when Marcus is out, although he's only missed a couple games here, so it's not like he's been out this extended period. When Marcus is out, the drop off from the big three to anybody else, I guess like Luke, you know, you could kind of throw in there, but there's a pretty stark drop off to who you trust handling the ball, playmaking, running the offense. Like, I understand that, but the minutes, I think, have been a little bit too high, and that's my concern here. Because it's also been like the Lakers have had blowouts where JJ continues to play them deep into the fourth quarter. It's not just like he's not Mark Dagnall with it of we're up by 20 entering the fourth, like you guys are done for the night. It's no, we're playing Luka and LeBron and Austin into the 7-minute mark, the 6-minute mark, the 5-minute mark. And it's like, I think he's got to let up a little bit with that because I think it's a little bit too much Thibodeau for me. And I just think it's gone a little bit too far here where, like, I mean, they're running Austin into the ground. Austin shot under 33% in all six games of the road trip from three, in part because I think that his minutes load right now is just unsustainable. So I think they got to be careful with that.
Yeah, I agree. He is exhausting Reeves right now. he's completely tired. So I agree the minutes are too high. They absolutely are. And JJ has not been very aggressive in getting rest. Instead, he's been overly cautious about keeping guys into games, worried about, you know, comeback victories and things like that, instead of just saying, hey, game's over and we can trust our bench to get through it. To your point, right now, since the All-Star break, Luka is number 2 in minutes per game. Austin is number 3 in minutes per game in the NBA, behind only Amen Thompson from the Houston Rockets, and LeBron checks in at 21st in the NBA in minutes per game since the All-Star break. So that during this run, they have been leaning very heavily into those guys. Is that what is the bigger factor? Is it JJ or is it the overall lack of depth on this roster that's creating this situation where JJ doesn't feel like he can trust some of the guys deeper on the bench?
I think it's definitely JJ in the sense that like he could cut back on some of the minutes, at least a little bit. I mean, I'm going to, like, for the record, before I say anything, I agree with Jovan. I think that the minutes need to cut back at the very least a little bit. But I'm going to play devil's advocate here because I do think that the situation is a little more complicated than it seems on the surface. So if you're the Lakers, you're not going into this playoff run for poops and giggles. LeBron's 41 years old. You're trying to win the championship. Now, we as realists may view them as a second-tier contender that doesn't have like that great of a shot of like ripping through San Antonio, then OKC, then Boston, for example. So like to set aside the delusions of grandeur, to play devil's advocate here, Denver, if you look at their schedule, if they win a home game against San Antonio on April 4th, and if OKC and San Antonio punt their last two games of the season, which is most like that last game for San Antonio, as long as Wemby plays in every one but one game between now and then, he can sit that game out and still be eligible for awards. So if they punt those two games and Denver wins one home game against San Antonio, they're probably winning out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The Lakers play the Suns, the Cavs, and the Thunder twice. And those are in that chunk of the season when those teams will probably still be trying, at least to a certain extent. So like now the Lakers have to lose three games, but like, let's say they lose the two Oklahoma City games. All you have to do is lose to Cleveland or lose to Phoenix. And all of a sudden you're the four seed, and being the four seed and having to play a better Minnesota team and having to go through Oklahoma City in round two is a much tougher path to the finals than potentially facing a weaker San Antonio team in round two. And the risk potentially of a Denver Minnesota upsetting an Oklahoma City before they even get to the conference finals. So like, I do think there's a certain amount of like, we have to win these games that's going on. The second piece of it, I think, is a continuity piece. This LeBron, Austin, Luka trio, since LeBron came back from that little break he took, is outscoring teams by over 21 points per 100 possessions in an almost 200-minute sample. And I do think that JJ's trying to drive as many reps as possible. The reason why I say that is the solution to what Jovan's pitching, which is something that I do agree with, is you stagger a little bit more. And you cut these guys down to 34, 36 minutes instead of 38, 40 minutes, which is going to lead to fewer lineups that have all three guys on the floor and more lineups that have one or two of them on the floor together. And I do think that there's kind of a two-pronged benefit in the sense that they get lots of reps for their big three, which is making up for lost time in the regular season, and they have this clear potential pitfall of slipping to the four seed. So I think that's the thought process. But to Jovan's point, I think they probably could have gone 5-1 on this road trip and cut everybody's minutes by 1 or 2 minutes. So that's really where it's more to me just like a slight tweak. I think they do have to hit it hard. They do have to go after these wins. I do think that it is absolutely worth it for the Lakers to try to get the three seed. I think their path is substantially easier there. It just simply, I think, needs to be tweaked a little bit because JJ's playing with a little bit of fire. Now, the upside is, because this weaker schedule here coming up, the Brooklyn game, the Washington game, there's a two-day rest sequence coming up at some point. I think it's after the Brooklyn game, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. They're going to get some rest here. So he might have already dodged the bullet. But there's no doubt, to Jovan's point, that he played with some fire. And Austin's legs are absolutely cooked.
That'll be the first two-game days off stretch the Lakers will have had since the All-Star break. Since the All-Star break. That'll be the first time since then that they've actually had 2 days in a row off. Now, of course, it immediately is followed by a back-to-back, Washington and Cleveland, because, of course, but we are going to be keeping an eye on that Denver game, especially, I believe it's April 4th, is Denver and San Antonio. If Denver wins that, yeah, they very well may win out, because that would be a double whammy in that scenario, because that would also push San Antonio down farther, which would increase the likelihood that San Antonio will and OKC will both have nothing to play for when they see Denver at the end of the season. So it's definitely possible that Denver could win out. Probably not likely, but it's possible that it could happen. All right.
There's also a scenario that if the Lakers beat OKC twice, OKC could drop to two, and then all of a sudden you might want to be in the 4-5.
Yeah, because San Antonio has the tiebreaker, don't they?
Yeah.
So tell me what you guys think about this. I think we are still with nine games out. I think there's too many games left and it's too close to start getting involved in like the shenanigans of, okay, if we try to lose this game, this will help us this way or anything. Like right now, I'm of the mindset, win everything you can right now and see where the chips fall. I think it's too close to start trying to mess with it too much, though.
Don't mess with the basketball gods.
Yeah. You try to win. Try to win every basketball game. That's your best
pathway. Try to win every game.
Yep. Okay. Trying to win every basketball game is your best pathway between here and the trophy.
Kristen said, 100%. Are you concerned that OKC may slip to number two? I didn't even see this, but that's the downside. Actually, that's the downside to the Lakers maybe beating the Thunder. If they beat them twice, suddenly San Antonio's got a shot to move up.
To Jovan's point, though, like if you beat OKC twice, you go into a second round series more confident in your matchup there.
Mm-hmm.
Good point.
Yeah, I don't think you try to duck the smoke. You're going to have to run into them at some point. So maybe you could even argue running into them earlier is a little bit more advantageous for you, at least. To be like healthier, you don't have to worry about your legs in the conference finals. Like, could be better for LA in that regard.
Not to mention, I think a second round loss to OKC where they appear competitive and stretch it to six or seven games is a real step forward towards trying to achieve their goals next season.
Yeah, I think it would be. That said, I still want to see them get through the second round if they can. But you're right; there would be a silver lining to it. This comment is similar. Is it okay if OKC drops to the two seed? But what's interesting is Peter here starts off saying analytics say San Antonio goes to the number one seed. I haven't seen that. Is that what the projections are now, that San Antonio will finish with the number one seed?
I mean, if you look at OKC's schedule, they have a pretty tough schedule. And of course, like, they're OKC, so they're going to be favored down the stretch in basically every game. But you look at it, they got Chicago coming up on Friday. Okay, that should be a win. But then they got New York, Detroit, LA, Utah, LA, Clippers, Nuggets, Suns. So they're playing teams. That's a tough schedule. And they're playing, every one of those teams is playing for something. Like, Lakers are playing to keep the three seed. Denver could be playing to try to jump up into the three seed or at least maintain number four. Phoenix is, I guess, at the end of the season might be just a game where they're not necessarily going for it. But the Clippers are still jockeying for position in the play-in. Like, Detroit, Boston, they've been trying to fend them off. New York is still jockeying for positions. Like, these are all teams that are playing for something and are going to be giving OKC their best shot. So, yeah, I mean, OKC's got a tough schedule.
So OKC, according to Tankathon, has the second most difficult remaining strength of schedule. So let me ask you guys this. If you had the choice to either be the three seed and get Houston in round one, or be the four seed and draw Minnesota in round one, but you're going to be on OKC's side of the bracket. Wait, flip that. You get Houston in round one, but you're on OKC's side of the bracket.
Think Houston, OKC, or Minnesota, San Antonio.
Or Minnesota, San Antonio. Yes, I flipped it.
Strictly as a basketball fan, like, so I would argue, so let's say, for instance, the Lakers won a first round series and then lost to San Antonio or OKC. What would you rather have in your back pocket as a first round win? Beating that flawed Houston team or getting revenge on Minnesota? Like, that's the one thing where I
beating Minnesota.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Like, if things broke a certain way and the Lakers caught Minnesota in round one, even if they did have OKC waiting in the second round, there would still be a part of me that'd be like, all right, you guys remember what happened last year. Let's see what you got. You know, like, let's see. Cause like, I think that it's a fundamentally different series because of the difference in Luka and the difference at the center position, LeBron being healthier athletically, although he's not shooting the ball as well, but Austin's better than he was last year. Like, I think that would be a really fun one to see. And like, frankly, I would give Minnesota a much better chance to beat the Lakers than Houston, but it would be one that I think would give a lot of fulfillment to that locker room if they could pull that off.
Jovo, what would you rather see?
It's tough because I know the Lakers swept Minnesota in the season series, but I do think that would be a much tougher series than Houston. Like, I think Minnesota could beat the Lakers. Like, there's a pathway for Minnesota to beating the Lakers in round one. I do not see a pathway for Houston to beating the Lakers in round one. So I think there is greater certainty for me in the Houston matchup compared to the Minnesota matchup. But I think it would be more impressive to go toe to toe with OKC in round two and maybe have like a six or seven game series potentially on the high side. So, yeah, I'm not sure. I guess I would maybe I'd go the Minnesota San Antonio route because I still would pick the Lakers over the Wolves. I just think it's a tougher series that, you know, I said Lakers over Rockets in five. I think Minnesota is probably a 6 or 7 game series.
Yeah.
So that, I guess, getting the revenge on Minnesota and then having the chance in round two against San Antonio, or more of a chance against San Antonio than OKC, that might be the better pathway. But then there's also something to, if you beat Houston in a 5-game series, you have fresher legs, a little bit more rest to take on OKC, then you could have maybe a more competitive second round matchup with them. And like, there's no, like, I think there'll be people who are disappointed if the, I'm just talking with Laker fans here. There will be Laker fans who are disappointed if the Lakers lose in round two to San Antonio. I think everyone universally would understand a second round loss to OKC, right? Like OKC defending champs, deepest team in the league. I mean, insane top 10, like just one, I think, yeah, one of the best top 10s I think we've seen from like a depth perspective. It's just ridiculous what they have coming off their bench. So, yeah, I don't know. I'll say this. I prefer the Houston-San Antonio path. And that's the way that things are at right now. But we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see if it ultimately lines up that way. But I agree. I mean, it's really interesting. If OKC and San Antonio flip, it'll be very interesting to see what ultimately is the better path for the Lakers. I think you can make arguments for either side. I think ultimately the Minnesota side that would see San Antonio provides maybe a higher upside, higher ceiling, because there's a greater chance, even not a good chance, but a greater chance of getting by San Antonio than OKC, but perhaps also a lower floor, because losing to Minnesota in round one would certainly be more possible than losing to Houston, and that would feel awful to go through this run they've been on and then wind up in the same spot they were in last year. So maybe higher ceiling, lower floor.
To Jovan's point too, like, San Antonio has the clearest path of any team in the NBA to get better from this year to next year, just because the internal improvement with Wemby and Steph and Dylan Harper is just going to be so difficult to keep up with.
All right, let's go here. Are the Lakers allowed to exhaust their cap space and then bring back players using their bird rights like LeBron, Austin, Rui, Jackson?
Do you know their cap holds off the top of your head?
I know Austin's is going to be about 20. LeBron's is somewhere like 55, something like that. I can look them up. Rui's is going to be pretty high.
Rui's like 27. It's yeah, pretty high.
It's up there. So the answer is yes and no. Yes and no. Like, yes, they can exhaust their cap space. Like Austin Reeves, his cap hold will be less than what he gets. So they're going to keep him on that cap hold for as long as they can. They're going to use that to their advantage. They're going to use their cap space. For somebody like LeBron, assuming they're not going to pay him the 55-ish or so million that I believe is his cap hold is at, they're going to have to renounce him and then use an exception, like the room exception, to bring him back, or just use flat-out cap space. But in order to have the cap space to spend, they're going to have to sign him to a new contract or renounce him and not have that cap hold on the books. The same will be true with Rui Hachimura. Jackson Hayes, I don't recall what his cap, I think it's at like four.
I think it's around five maybe or something. I'll say this. I don't think it makes any sense to keep LeBron and Rui on their respective cap holds.
No.
I think the Lakers need to make one of two decisions. You either re-sign them immediately, and that's obviously pre-negotiated going into free agency, or you rescind their rights. Doesn't mean you let them go. You can still re-sign those guys. But when we talk about this off-season, ideal off-season of having this 55 to 50 or 50 to 55 million in cap space, that is based on LeBron and Rui not being, you know, their rights not being on the books. If LeBron's rights are on the books, the Lakers don't have cap space, like, until, you know, then depending on the figure they re-sign him to. But like, that entire premise is based on LeBron not being on the books at 55 million. If you have LeBron and Rui making a combined $90 million or you know, 80, whatever million dollars, you're not going to have cap space. So that's where, like, you know, talking about the rights here, I think Austin and Jackson are the two guys I could see them keeping them, because Austin's cap hold is less than his contract he's going to sign. Jackson is in maybe the ballpark of where he'll end up. But LeBron and Rui, I mean, LeBron is probably making more than double what he's going to end up making, you know, next season from a cap hold perspective. Rui, I would say, is at least like 10 to 12 million above what he's going to be making. So for both guys, the way you do this is you either sign them to contracts immediately at the beginning of free agency, and then you do have a smaller amount of cap space, but like you at least have your orders, you know, sorted, or you rescind the rights, you try to make your moves, and then if you don't, you still have the option to re-sign either one of those guys. But yeah, they're not going to be, I mean, again, if they're keeping these guys on their cap holds, they're not going to have cap space.
Yeah, I just pulled the numbers here, and the actual cap hold for LeBron, it's even higher than I thought. It's $59.5 million. Rui is $27.4
million. Maxi, that's $90 million.
That's $90 million right there, yeah. Maxi 86, is but yeah. $20.9 million. That's obviously
why is Rui so high?
They're projecting the, because they're projecting the raise off of his current year salary, which is that 18.2%. I don't remember the exact rationale behind all, but like Austin's is 20 million because he's only making 14 right now. Okay. It's a percentage raise off of the current one that they're trying to set aside. They don't want the, like from way back in the day, the Kawhi loophole where, you know, he's a free agent, but the Spurs are going to keep his rights, but they don't have to set aside much money. So they spent and spent and spent. And then signed Kawhi to this huge contract. They set aside a big chunk of money here to make sure that you can't do that. The Lakers can still finagle it a little bit with that $20 million for Austin, the $4.5 million for Jackson. He could wind up getting more than that. It wouldn't really hurt the Lakers' spending power because he'd be sitting on their books at $4.5 million. We're talking about Jackson Hayes. But it's going to be order of operations-wise. We also remember that none of these can actually be signed until July 6th. So the Lakers, what you would see is Shams or whoever would tweet out, LeBron James has come to terms on a deal with the Lakers at X amount for X number of years or whatever. And then they would actually sign, put pen to paper July 6th, submit them in the right order so that then their cap space is cleared up. LeBron would no longer be on the books for that. And that's when you would see the team actually tweet about it and everything when it actually became official and the moratorium lifts. But yeah, it's going to be, look, this will be a test for Rob Pelinka. He's going to have to do some cap gymnastics in order to make this all work out. I don't think, we talked about this the other day, I don't think you can keep LeBron, Rui, Austin, Jackson, Kennard, all of these guys and add pieces to your roster unless we're doing something unexpected, like LeBron takes a minimum or something like that. That's just not happening. So how Rob plays the situation is going to be critical because the puzzle pieces are going to have to fit just right. It sounds like they've got a ton of cap space, and they do, but they also have a lot to do. And we didn't even mention Marcus Smart. He's got a player option. DeAndre Ayton's got a player option. There are a lot of moving pieces for Rob to figure out this summer.
Yeah, I've been saying I think they're probably going to have to pick between two of Marcus, Rui, and Luke. I don't see a scenario in which they realistically keep all three of them. And I think you could argue, based on Rui's potential salary versus Luke's potential salary, Rui could be making over double what, like, Rui could get, let's just say, like 14, 15 million, and then Luke's making 6 million, 7 million, 8 million, somewhere in that range. That's a pretty big gap between those two that's an extra 8 to 10 million to play with your cap space that. You could earmark for a Marcus Smart raise. You could earmark for a Jackson Hayes raise. It's just going to be tough to keep all these guys. So again, I made this point last show when people submit to me their projected rotation for next year. I think people are overestimating what the Lakers are going to be able to do if they're adding someone. Like if they just run it back, they can run it back and have the same group. But I think we've seen some of the limitations with this group. If they're making a real addition or two, it's not only going to be LeBron taking a pay cut, it's going to be probably losing one to two rotation guys as well.
If you guys had to choose between just next year, so don't think of this as a long-term asset thing, but just simply as a basketball conversation. If you had to have just one of Rui or LeBron, both at $15 million, so Rui but no LeBron at $15 million, or LeBron but no Rui at $15 million for just 1 year, who would you rather have next year?
LeBron.
I don't think it's close. Easy.
So then do you let Rui walk and then just do you view it as more of like a, we have 2 years to find our next starting power forward kind of thing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what it came down to.
Yeah. I was looking at some of the numbers last night because someone had brought up, so someone was doing a few super chats, like anti Rui super chats. And we were kind of digging into some of the numbers. So like the Luka, LeBron, Rui combination, now it's over 300 minutes, minus four net rating. you do Luka and LeBron without Rui plus two net rating. So it's about like a 6.5 point per 100 possession swing. And that's at 600 minutes, the Luka LeBron without Rui. So like there's a real limitation there with those three. Obviously, we're talking about one or the other. But then I even looked at Luka, Austin, and Rui, and that three-man combination, plus seven net rating in, I forget the minute allotment, but it's over 250. But then you take Rui out of it, and Austin and Luka without Rui, plus 15 net rating. And that's also at multiple hundred minute sample size. So like they've been able to be successful with Rui with those two. And again, that's not normalizing for LeBron or not. But without Rui, they've been even better on both sides of the ball. And I don't think at this point with the sample size we have of the Luka era, I think Rui could be a very valuable bench player. I don't think he's a long-term or even short-term starter, ideally, because if you're starting, I know Austin and Luka have been better defensively lately. If you're starting Austin, Luka, and Rui as three of your five starters, you really need to nail the other two positions, and it needs to not be Marcus Smart and DeAndre Ayton. It needs to be, like, I know that lineup has been successful, but I think against more competitive teams and in bigger situations, I just don't think that's enough defensive talent. So I say all that to say, I just don't think Rui is the long-term fit or even the short-term fit as a starting four. If he's a bench player, that's a different story.
To your point, but this is actually, this is an interesting stat. 51 minutes in the 10-1 stretch of LeBron, Luka, and Rui, a 124 defensive rating. They're still plus 2.4, so they're winning those minutes unlike they were early in the year. But in a stretch where the Lakers have been playing their very best basketball, they've been barely positive and terrible on defense with LeBron, Rui, and Luka on the floor together.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he's kind of become expendable, to be completely honest. Mm-hmm. Like, I think the shooting still has its value, but I think when we look at his consistent contributions, it's like he will hit a three or two, and then he might get like a 1 to 2 mid-range pull-ups, and that's nice. That could be anywhere between 6 to 10 points on a given night, but the rebounding, the defense, the passing, the ball handling, he's below average in basically every other facet of the game, and just isn't really contributing in multiple regards the same way that a Marcus is, a Jake is, even a Vando is if he comes in. Like, I just think that there's a real limitation there too. He's basically just a shooter. And you also have a guy in Luke who could do some of those things, but also has the ball handling, has the passing, gets the blender going, is constantly attacking on the weak side. Like, I just think it's a skill set they still need within, like, they need a certain amount of shooting, but outside of maybe some of the small ball stuff, which I think he's been better in small ball looks rather than like more traditional looks, I think his, like, they've kind of been succeeding with him either out of the lineup entirely or in like a much smaller role. And I feel like, you know, I just think looking forward, unless he's willing to take a massive pay cut, I think you probably have to move on.
That's not off the table either with the way the cap space situation is around the league. It's very possible that he just struggles to find a really big offer and then the Lakers can pull him with like a Jake LaRavia type of contract.
Exactly. And that was going to be my point there. It depends on what else is out there. Who's going to sign him to that $15 million plus? Maybe that offer's there, but maybe it's not. I know there's a strong demand for wings, so that might help Rui, but his market is going to be fascinating this summer. We do need to jump to our sponsor here. We've got one or two more questions we're going to get to here. Big thank you to OG for sponsoring this show.
All right. Quick shout out to today's sponsor, OG. If you're locked into everything happening in college basketball right now, breaking down matchups, late game decisions, and how far teams can really go, OG is built for you. OG is a prediction market experience where instead of traditional sports books, you trade real world outcomes. On OG, you're trading simple yes or no outcome contracts. For example, you could trade outcomes like, will this team win tonight? Or will this team advance to the next round? Prices move in real time based on market demand, which reflects how confident people are in that outcome. OG prediction markets are derivatives products offered by crypto.com Derivatives North America, a commodity futures trading commission-regulated exchange. Available to eligible users, some state restrictions apply. Right now, with March Madness going on, OG is running a bonus where you can earn up to $150 in extra bonuses just by trading your predictions. You get rewarded whether your predictions win or lose. You just need to hit the trading volume goal. You can earn $20 per round across multiple rounds, plus additional streak bonuses if you stay consistent. The goal is simple. Trade at least $50 worth of contracts per round to unlock each bonus. So if you're already following the tournament and making predictions, this is a way to actually engage with it in real time. OG isn't just sports either. You can trade markets across politics, economics, and more. Check leaderboards and jump into live chat with other users. If you want to check it out, head to OG.com or scan the QR code on the screen. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, and again, thank you to OG for sponsoring the show, and thank you to Jovan for that phenomenal read there. Let's go. We've got a couple of questions about Jake before we wrap the show here. A couple of questions about Jake. One had a little funnier. What's worse, LeBron's whistle or even remove the J? Aches, jump shot. He lost the J there. Then this one said, hope last night was a spark. Jake needs to become a playoff factor. If we're serious about winning at all, we need Jackson Hayes, Rui, Kennard, and Jake all stepping up. Please rank bench in order of importance. Jason, what did you think of Jake's game last night?
He was awesome. He set the tone defensively. I mean, you know what's crazy? The Lakers don't force an enormous amount of turnovers, but they force a lot more than they did earlier in the season, and they've just been really good at capitalizing on those turnovers just because of, frankly, LeBron and also the work that Luka does as a kick-ahead passer. I think Austin plays with a good amount of pace in transition too, and I give Jackson some credit here as well for running the floor. But there's a defensive playmaking element that I think is an aggregate skill on the team. I think it's a combination of IQ, guys being able to anticipate where the ball is going next and jumping passing lanes. But also, like, LeBron, particularly Austin, Marcus, Jake, and Luka all have great hands. They're just very good at getting deflections and attacking ball handlers when they're in their dribble pocket. So, like, I just think Jake just adds to that aggregate ability. And again, like, I think with Jake, we talked about this in the Tuesday show. He's kind of in a perfect spot in the rotation for the Lakers right now because they don't need him. But on the nights when he's got it, he can be useful for a shift each half. And so he's kind of slotted nicely into a spot that has worked. And one of the things, too, with the way that the Lakers have been running action too, the ball's not ending up with him in the corner as often as it used to. There's a little bit more in the flow. There's a little bit more in the move. And so it's more accentuated some of his positive traits offensively in terms of like his connective playmaking and his ability to occasionally make a move around the basket where he can get a bucket. And then he's been very good as an offensive rebounder. We talked about this like 2 weeks ago, but during the last stretch post All-Star break, I haven't checked the numbers in three or four games, but he was averaging over 4 offensive rebounds per 36 minutes. So, like, he's found his ways to be impactful. And again, you can get nitpicky with him. And yes, I would argue a player that's as limited offensively as him should probably be a veteran minimum contract. So you could argue he's slightly overpaid, but it's not like he's making $16 million. He's making 6, you know. And so he's found his spot. He's on the fringe of the playoff rotation. My guess is we'll see him on some nights in the postseason, but then there will be nights, you know, especially late series pivotal moment where we might not see him. And I think that all just kind of makes sense for what Jake brings to the table.
Yeah, that agreed.
To answer the first question, LeBron's whistle is worse than Jake's jumper. LeBron just gets absolutely hammered out there. And
it's insane.
Yeah, it is.
My ranking, I actually think I would go in this order. I think I would go Jackson, Rui, Luke, Jake in terms of order of importance, because Jackson, I mean, we didn't really touch on Jackson that much today, but last night, season highs in points and rebounds, had 21 and 10. First 20 and 10 game as a Laker, third of his career. I thought it was his best game of the season. And I think he's been trending up the last four games. That Detroit game, he had six stocks. I know he had the rough shift to open the fourth quarter and was part of a couple of those turnovers. Lakers had like five or six turnovers in the first few minutes. But I think Jackson, to me, is both DeAndre insurance, but even if he's not DeAndre insurance, it's just nice to have a nice backup center. And again, it's such a departure from where LA was at last season when Jackson was the primary starter and the backup option was just go small for 15 to 20 minutes every single game. So I think like he just does certain things that like Lakers kind of have to balance out the center spot, where I think right now Jackson has been awesome defensively with the playmaking and switching out to guys, and like his level of aggression defensively and also the verticality. Like JJ said not too long ago that he thinks Jackson is their best rim protector and their best verticality guy. I would agree with that based on at least how he's been defending recently. Then you also have the natural offensive pairing with Luka and LeBron and Austin. We saw it last night. He connected with all three of those guys. I think from like what the Lakers need at the center spot, you could make a case he is closer to that Derek Lively archetype than DeAndre Ayton is. And that's not to say like DeAndre Ayton still has his value and still, especially as like a mid-range guy, floater guy, he could attack in ways that Jackson can't. But if we're just talking like run toward the rim, be a lob threat, play with a certain amount of energy, and then also defensively switch out and be a versatile defender, I think Jackson's got the edge there. So I think DeAndre is going to continue to start. I think and where DeAndre has the edge is the rebounding, right? So that's the big gap between them is DA is consistently getting, 2 to 3 times as many rebounds as Jackson, basically every single night. So there is a toughness physicality that I think DA has the edge in, but Jackson's been great the last few games. And it's nice to have that more of a competition again, where there was a stretch not too long ago where I thought like DA had bounced back. Jackson wasn't coming back off of his injury, was not the same player. He's been the same guy the last few games. And if DA's playing well and Jackson's playing well, I just think that raises LA's ceiling.
100%. Yeah, I agree with everything you said there. I think Jackson Hayes has become one of the better backup bigs in the NBA. He's been much more consistent this year. And I think he's really important coming off the bench for the Lakers. I think Kennard is important too, just as a not just a shooter, but as a ball mover as well. His ability to get into the paint, move the basketball around, find the open man. I worry a little bit about the athleticism come playoff time to see what that's going to look like. But yeah, I look, Jackson's been great. Jake will get some minutes here and there. I think he'll be more matchup dependent. And yeah, the three's got to start falling for him at some point. He's got to regress back to what he's been over the course of his career. And that is a serviceable three-point shooter as opposed to what he's been lately, which is a very reluctant three-point shooter and not a very efficient three-point shooter either. So he's got 9 games to kind of sort that out. Hopefully practice coming up this weekend can help him get a shot back in order here. But yeah, I think I'd put it basically in the same order that you did there, Jovan. All right, let's wrap things up with this. In terms of a realistic summer for a contender tier, Luka, Reeves, Watson, I saw this question without going into, the specific targets and all this. I'd just be very hesitant to assume that they're going to get multiple restricted free agents. Like, it's very rare for a restricted free agent to break free from their incumbent team, period. And I know people look at Denver and say, well, they're vulnerable because their cap situation. And to a degree, that's true. But there's also some things that they can do to increase flexibility. So I don't get your heart set on multiple RFAs landing on the Lakers. It's difficult to get even one of them. I think the better path is caution with this. Assume that they are not going to be available. And then if it happens, hey, it can be a pleasant surprise. But I see a scenario where Lakers fans are going to get all excited. We're getting Walker Kessler and Peyton Watson this summer. It's a pump the brakes. These RFAs are very, very difficult to get.
And most importantly, unlike 3.5-4 weeks ago, I feel like we can actually sit down and be like, hey, let's enjoy this playoff run. Like for a while there, it was like, well, how are we going to fix these dudes? But like now it's been really fun actually getting to kind of focus on the basketball and lean into playoff matchups and what this group can accomplish this year. I thought yesterday just flat out was a dead serious performance from a team that wanted to end the road trip and go home. But at the same time, like, they didn't beat the Pacers as bad as they did. Now, obviously, there was the late comeback just because the Pacers quite literally never stopped running. But there's very much a, oh, the Pacers are the worst team in the league thing going on, which is totally valid. But the Lakers also just came out and played fucking awesome yesterday, and they kick butt, and they like got out of there, and they just look like a dead serious team. And you know, the off season will be the off season, and I'm excited for that when we get there. But like, we get to talk real basketball for at least the next month, and that's like, that's pretty exciting stuff right there.
Let's go. Great run right now for the Lakers, and we're certainly happy to see all of you here. Make sure, if you haven't done so yet, hit that subscribe button on the channel. Follow us over on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. We're gonna wrap things up there. Jovan, Jason, thanks, guys. This has been awesome.
Wednesday, Friday next week at 11 a.m. Pacific.
Yep.
Reacting to the Cleveland game and then the OKC game. So excited about it. OKC, third game in four nights. Like that's going to be a really tough one. Cleveland, second night of back-to-back. So a couple real tests for LA next week.
Yep, for sure. It's going to be interesting to see how the Lakers play during that stretch. And we'll, of course, keep an eye on the standings and everything else going on as we get ready for the playoffs. Again, thank you very much, everybody. Till next time. See ya. And stay safe.